When you set boundaries with people who you've not set boundaries with before, they're going to feel like you're trying to control them. They're not going to like
yes.
it. But you're not really trying to control them. This is what you need. They don't have to do it.
On your end. Okay.
Today, we are joined by Nancy Pickard, a master integrative life coach, certified relational life therapy coach, author, and relationship and boundary coach. Nancy helps individuals and couples move beyond people-pleasing, unhealthy patterns, disconnect, and fear so that they can communicate honestly and build stronger relationships. She's also an author of the book Bigger, Better, Braver. Nancy, welcome to the Live Your Best Marriage podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. So Nancy, I'm really excited about this conversation today because boundaries are one of the most misunderstood part of marriage. And some people avoid boundaries because they do not wish to appear selfish, disrespectful, or disloyal. While other, just the word boundaries just sounds very controlling and very punishing. Today, I really want us to talk about how couples can set boundaries that protect their love, honesty, and unity without cutting people off unnecessarily.
That's good.
Yes. So would you want to tell us a little bit about your story? And you say that you understand people pleasing and overgiving because you have experienced it yourself. How did that look like in your own life?
Well, we talk a lot in RLT, which is relational life therapy, about psychological
yes.
patriarchy. And in psychological patriarchy, traditionally, women are taught to be compliant and passive aggressive and not be in control and powerful in the relationship and be a people pleaser and to be a conflict avoider. And men are taught to be brave and stoic and non-emotional. And they're actually taught from a very young age to not have emotions, so they don't even know their emotions. And so what happens when
right.
you get this together in a relationship, it's bound to have issues because eventually women stop wanting to be people pleasers and conflict avoidant, and they don't want to be wantless and needless anymore, and they want to get their needs met. And yet when you say to a man anything that's critical, because they were taught to be so stoic and in charge and capable, they get defensive because their ego immediately feels that they're broken, they're wrong, they're not doing their manly thing, they're not worthy. And so there's the dynamic right then and there. And that's the main crux
right. yes.
of why relationships don't work. And
yes.
Go ahead. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. So through this whole thing, how did you realize that, like, you are keeping everybody happy, what that was actually costing you something?
It gets exhausting, right? And
yes.
how long can you be needless and wantless? And
yes.
how long can you try to twist yourself up in a pretzel to be digestible to your partner? So
You're right.
it doesn't work. And the problem is that women get tired of it, but men didn't get the memo. Because grandiosity, which is what they're in the one-up position, that feels good. It's good to be king.
Yep.
So they don't want to come down. And yet it's very non-relational. And so the men are winning
yes.
every fight, but they're losing the war. Because the women that come to me, they want to leave their marriage. Because their needs are not being met. And partly because they don't know how to ask for what they need.
Yes. So before the podcast, we had talked a little bit about boundaries, and you had mentioned few things like different type of boundaries. So how can you just define this word boundaries in just plain language so that people can really understand?
Okay.
Because it's been thrown a lot and we might be actually missing the point, like the real
yeah.
meaning.
So think about boundaries as limits, what you will and
yes.
will not tolerate, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And
yes.
so that's one whole type of boundary. And that's basically in relationships, it's what you want from your partner, what you need from your family, and what you need from your friends, and what is no longer tolerable for you. And if you come to those
yes.
boundaries, then you have to ask in a way, we use a boundary script. I feel X when you do Y. Would you be willing to do Z? Yes. I'm making it about me. You might not feel this way, but I feel disrespected when you leave the dishes in the sink. Yes. Would you be willing to just put them in the dishwasher? That's okay. A boundary script. Or I get scared when you drive so fast. Would you be willing for me to slow down when I'm in the car? That's a boundary. Now, I get scared when you have more than two drinks in a night. Would you be willing to stop at two drinks? These are boundaries. It doesn't mean that the person that you're saying it to is going to do it. Just because you set a boundary doesn't mean anybody has to follow it. But if you set a boundary, you can't cross it. So let's say I say to my partner, I don't like who you become after two drinks. Would you be willing to stop at two drinks? And to honor and respect myself, if you have more than two drinks, I'm going to sleep in the guest room by myself. Or if you have more than two drinks and we're out for dinner, I'm going to drive home and you can take the Uber because I'm done. I'm leaving. So that's how you don't cross your boundary. If you say to your partner,
yes,
would you be willing to not have more than two drinks, and they have four drinks and you don't do anything, you're like, oh, I tried. You're the one that's crossing the boundary.
Crossing the boundary that you yourself put there. Correct. In the beginning. And what if somebody says, okay, so what's the difference between a boundary and somebody trying to control another person? Are they different or is it the same thing?
When you set boundaries with people who you have not set boundaries with before, they're going to feel like you're trying to control them. They're not going to like
yes.
it. But you're not really trying to control them. This is what you need. They don't have to do it.
On your end.
But if they're not going to do it, you've got to be brave enough to rock the boat and make a different choice for yourself. Or don't set the boundary.
Yes.
Don't set a boundary that you're not ready to keep.
To follow up, yeah.
Yeah, that's on you. Nobody can cross your boundary except for you. So don't set one until you're ready to keep it. And then if you set a boundary, you've got to do something if they don't.
Yes. So basically, so it's like, in a way, you're setting an ultimatum?
Don't think of it as an ultimatum. That's controlling.
Okay.
Try to think of it as an ultimatum. This is something I need. And if you love me, you're going to want me to be happy. Happy spouse, happy
yes.
house, right? And so people have to stop thinking about you and me mentality and
yes.
think in terms of an
yes.
us mentality.
Okay.
And a boundary is good for the ecology of the couple. This is what I need to feel happy. This is what I need to feel safe. Would you be willing to do this for me? This is me asking you to be relationally generous.
So with that, we've always been taught that people pleasing can really look loving and very generous because it looks like you're very loving and generous. So how does it eventually produce being exhausted, dishonesty, and resentment from being loving and generous?
Because what happens with people pleasing is that it's really manipulation. I'm going to do this for you, so you're going to love me more and take care of me. I'm going to do this for you, so you're going to be in a good mood, and then you're going to give me what I need. So everybody tries to control in a relationship, and if you're the one in the relationship that's power over, you just overtly control. This is what I need. This is the way it's going to be. I've got the money. I've got the power. This is it, right? If you don't
yes.
have the power, you're one down in the relationship, and you still
yes.
try to control, but you do it through manipulation, passive aggressive. I'm not going to go out with you because you didn't do this. I'm not going to have sex with you because you wouldn't let me buy that coat. Who knows what? But
yes,
that's manipulation.
So I would request you to drive slower, but if you don't, I will not be in the car with you when you're driving that fast.
Correct. And the thing is, if you just say to your partner, you drive like a maniac, slow down. They're not going to slow down. It's subjective. They're going to say, no, I'm not. And that's going to be the end of it. If you say to your partner, I know you love me, and right or wrong, I'm afraid when you drive fast. Do you think for me you could slow down while I'm in the car? That's a request. It's not a demand. It's a request.
Yes. And the request, you're framing it in a way that it's about you feeling anxious and fearful, not, we are not subjectively trying to put them, the other person down.
Correct.
So what if they come back and say, you know what, I really feel rejected with your boundaries.
I'm sorry you feel that way. You don't have to do it, but then I'm going to make a different choice.
Yes.
I'm just not going to get in the car with you.
Okay.
And I'm not going to stay while
That's
you have more than two drinks or three drinks, whatever. Listen, I work with 20-year-olds and 70-year-olds. The 20-year-olds, I have to say four drinks, right? You've
yep.
got to know your people, and you've got to know what boundaries you can set and what's reasonable.
Yes.
So
but
there's also psychological boundaries, and those boundaries are, let's say you're always getting your feelings hurt, or you're always hurting people's feelings, right? We call those,
yes.
these are your emotional boundaries, your psychological boundaries, and there are two of them. One of them is your protective boundary. Picture like an orange with the thick skin, right? That's
yep.
your protective boundary. It keeps anything from getting in that you don't want to get in. And if
Inside,
I put
yes.
my hand up like this, anything that comes at me could get stopped by my protective boundary.
Yes.
The other boundary is your containing boundary. Now the hand is here. This
yes.
protects the world from what gets out. So if you're boundaryless, meaning you say anything that's on your mind and you say mean and hurtful things all the time, you have a very leaky containing boundary. At the same time,
yes.
if you're always somebody who's getting their feelings hurt all the time, oh my God, this person hurt me, this did this, I can't believe they didn't show up, I can't believe they did this, you've got a very weak protective boundary.
Boundary.
You're letting everything in. Whether it's true for you or not, you're just, if somebody says you don't look good in that, you're fat, I don't like your hair that way, you, it's like you melt. It's all in there. You absorb it all like
yeah.
a sponge.
You don't have some sort of a barrier or a
Correct.
Shield.
So
yes.
the criteria
yes.
that we use, is this true for me? Is it kind and respectful? And is it necessary in the moment? If the answer to those questions is no, keep your boundary up and don't let it in. If you can see that the person that you're talking to is triggered and emotionally upset, anything they say is not going to be from the right part of their brain, the wise adult part of their brain. They're not going to be relational. They're not going to be looking for communication and vulnerability and intimacy. Don't take it in. And if you're triggered, don't talk to your partner. Don't, because you're the same part of your brain, we call it the adaptive child part of your brain, it's really the subcortical part of your brain, that part of your brain doesn't care about communication, vulnerability, or intimacy. It only wants to do what it did as a child, fight, flight, freeze, or fix. And it's not going to go.
Yes.
So that's part of this whole boundary conversation.
Yes. And a lot of couples that we see, the real difficulty for them, it's not about setting boundaries with each other. It's actually not setting a boundary with the in-laws. And most of the time, it's getting the husband and the wife united enough to actually create, to set one united boundary. That this is what we believe in, and this is what we are not going to tolerate. So how can couples handle that, coming together and be united enough to actually set one boundary to the in-laws?
Well, it's usually, obviously, if they're having an issue, it's because the child of the parents doesn't want to rock the boat, and the other partner is not used to that kind of situation from their family of origin, and they don't want it anymore.
Yes.
So they have to come together as a team. it's back to the us mentality. And
yep.
they have to ask for what they want as a solid unit, but they have to do it
yes.
respectfully. And they have to use the boundary. I'll give you an example what you could say. Listen, Mom, we love to have you guys come over, but it's very disruptive and we don't know you're coming over. Would you be willing to just
yes.
call us and ask us if it's a good time for you to come over?
And I like that you use a lot of us, we and mm-hmm. us, not I and my husband doesn't like it. It's we don't right. like it.
This is what we
call
need.
Us.
Would you
yes.
be willing to do this?
Yes. And that's really good. And our problem sometimes, we have different cultures. And in some cultures, saying no to parents or older relatives is seen as disrespectful. So how can couples honor their families of origin while still protecting their marriage using boundaries?
Times have changed. And you can be respectful and still get your needs
yes.
met. So you
right.
have to say it in a way that's respectful and you make it about you. You can even say, I know that when you were brought up, this is how it went, but that's not how it is anymore. And we
yes.
need you to respect what we're asking you. Would you be willing to do
yes.
that?
Yes. And then for most of the cross-cultural couples we are dealing with, the next thing is guilt. So with once you set a boundary with parents, there's a lot of guilt that follows, and they are regretting that they became strong enough to set that boundary. So how should they handle that?
It's not true that if you set boundaries for yourself, you're being so selfish, and that selfish is a polarity to selflessness. Selflessness is less self. You're not protecting
yep.
yourself. So there are times when you need to be selfish, and there are times when you need to be selfless. And where you really want to be is in the center of health. You want to take care of your needs and respect the needs of others. But if you go too far into either one of those polarities, there's going to be trouble. And if you've got in-laws that are obviously the generation behind you, right? And you have children, you can't live your life for the rules of the generation before you, because those are the things you're teaching your children. You want to teach your children what you want them to learn, not what your
yes.
in-laws or your parents want them to learn. That's two generations away. And they're living, the grandparents are living from what their parents and their parents. There's generational trauma coming down the line.
Yes.
And you can stop and face that and say, this is not what we want for our children.
It ends with us.
And so we love you. We want to see you. We want you to be a part of our life. And this is what we need from you.
Yes.
Would you be willing to do this? And what do you need
yes.
from us so you can do this?
And this is very important, because with cross-cultural marriages, sometimes one person coming from their family of origin will be letting their family of origin make decisions, marriage decisions in the marriage. And it's very hard for them to say no. This is between me and my wife. You guys cannot decide where our kids go to school, or you cannot decide where we are going to spend our vacation and things like that. It's
unless they're actually supporting
for them,
you.
It becomes very,
unless they're supporting
yes.
you, because that's another issue. If you're going to take help, if you're taking financial help, they are entitled to have a say. So if you don't want anybody but you and your wife to have a say in what you're doing, don't take money from your parents.
That's a very important thing, that if you don't want to take their ideas and all that and be all independent, then also don't be going and taking loans and things
right.
from
because
them.
Then they do get a say. There are strings attached
yes.
to money. Always are.
Yes. That reminds me of a story where this couple got money from her mom and dad to buy a house. So they pretty much put down more than 50% on the mortgage. But now they were trying to set boundaries that you cannot just show up here all the time. You cannot tell us how to redecorate. You cannot tell us about when it's time for us to put a new roof. We don't think it's time for us to put a new roof and things like that. But her mom and dad had put so much money into the deal that they felt obligated to, in a way, they saw that as one of their investments.
Correct.
So to speak. Yes.
Pay your parents back so that you have autonomy, or that's pay the piper.
Yep.
And it's
and that's very interesting.
Because different cultures have different rules, different customs. And when you come together with somebody who's got a different culture, you actually need to figure these things out.
Yes.
Different cultures are very different. And so you have to respect each other's, but you also have to come together as a team and make a decision for what's good for you. How much can you tolerate? How much of your in-laws can you tolerate? What are you willing to take advice from? What aren't you willing to take advice from? Yes. That kind of stuff.
And especially when it comes to helping a family of origin, how much money will you tolerate being sent back to the family of origin while you feel like everything needs to stay in your new unit and you're trying to set a boundary, but there's this long expectation that this kid thought that, okay, now I have a good job, I need to start sending money back. But so those are the things that can be very
conflict
and very complex sometimes. Yes. And I like to bring up, I know you had said that boundaries, you're not really setting ultimatums, because ultimatums, in a way, you are controlling. What's the difference between saying, this is what I need to remain healthy and connected, to say, do this and I'll punish you?
Well, that's retaliatory. That's a losing strategy. So being retaliatory is never, it's a losing strategy. There are 5 losing strategies. That's one of them. They're losing strategies because they take you further away from connection instead of towards connection. So retaliation, if you don't do this, I'm going to do that. First of all, there's tone, there is intent. There's a lot of different things that are involved. You don't want to be controlling. You want to get your needs met.
Yes.
So instead of complaining, inherent in every complaint is a request. Don't drive so fast is a complaint.
Yes.
Would you be willing to drive slower? It scares me. Is a request.
Yes.
A complaint is going to get them defensive. A request hopefully will not.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. And I wanted to ask, this is more personal, because I saw that you were able to climb Mount Kilimanjaro at 61. Yeah. And you wrote the book Bigger, Better, and Braver. So what did climbing that mountain teach you about fear and doing difficult things?
Well, I already believed and still do that everything is outside your comfort zone, right? Feel the fear and do it anyway is a famous quote. And it's true.
Yes.
You want to grow, you have to take chances, even though you're afraid. Fear of success, fear of failure, fear of heights, fear of living outside. There were a lot of fears involved. Flying alone to Kilimanjaro, joining people I don't know. All of those things, living outside at 61 for 8 nights, right? Those were all fearful things. You can't imagine how amazing I felt when I was done. Because what it taught me was age is just a number. I'm still me. I'm still an athlete. I'm still a powerful human being. And if there's something I want to do, I'm going to do it. And that's what fear teaches me. Listen, hear it. Have compassion for the inner child who's fearful and move forward anyway, because that's where the growth is.
Okay, so bringing it to the concept of marriage, so what emotional mountains or what emotional fears do we need to climb so that we can get more closer in our relationships?
You have to learn to be vulnerable, and being vulnerable is very scary for everybody, but mainly for men, because they weren't taught to be vulnerable. You have to be in a safe place so you can trust your partner to be vulnerable. I have a lot of women that will come to me. They'll be, I don't feel seen and heard. My husband, everything I say, he takes it He gets defensive. Oh, nothing's enough. I'm not good enough. Nothing will ever be good enough for you. I can't keep you happy. Blah, blah, blah. Right? So when women will say that to me, I'll say, you have to be a safe landing for the man to tell you what he's really feeling. Because I'll tell you the truth, when women actually hear what most men are thinking, they're not happy. They don't like what they're thinking. So the response isn't good. And then the man goes back into his shell and says, that didn't work. I'm not sharing anymore.
Yep.
That's the problem. A, the man doesn't know how to share. And B, when he does share, the woman doesn't like what he's saying. And then she gets upset. And then he goes back into his cave and he says, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
Yes. And as long as we can pretend that this thing is working and be out of each other's hairs, that's fine. And we can just run the clock on this one.
We can just be stably miserable together.
Yep. And there's a lot of folks in their older years, they just know, okay, this is it. We're just going to run this clock until it's over, but I'm not going to rock the boat. This is how she likes it. I don't want to be criticized. And
They coexist.
Everybody just goes to their little hole and keep quiet. Yeah.
They coexist. Yeah. And both parties have to want to change. Every relationship is made up of harmony, disharmony, and repair. It could happen 10 times in a day. If you don't repair, you don't really go back into harmony. You go back into stable misery. But if you actually learn to be able to sit down and talk about what just happened, and from a safe place because you're doing it in a safe way, then you can repair. And then you're going to feel so much better. Yes. And then it truly will be harmony until the next thing that happens.
And until the next one, and then you go through the same cycle again. Yes. So it's not the absence of conflicts or issues. It's just knowing how to handle 100%. Them. And
two people.
Continue.
You can't think that two people are going to live in harmony. It's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. So you have to learn how to repair, which none of us are shown that or taught that. You have to learn how to repair. It's one of the main things I teach my couples is how to do healthy repair, how to get your needs met, how to ask for it in a way where your partner's going to win and you're going to win. These are all the things you need to learn. But to think that you're not going to have disruption is just, it's insane.
The idea you're having two different people from two different childhoods, different families, and they're coming together to build a life together, and you're saying that they are not going to have any conflicts, that's being Pollyannish.
Yeah, because the universe actually brings us a partner who is set up to trigger our wounds. Terry Real says the mysticism of marriage is that you date other people, but you marry the one that is most specifically designed to stick a hot searing rod in your eyeball. And the reason is to heal those wounds. You can't heal them in a vacuum. You heal them because you get triggered by your partner and you learn how to heal it. So it doesn't make your partner the wrong partner. They're the right partner, but you have to be willing to do your work.
And that's the key here. You have to be willing to do the work. Not make them do the work. You do the work.
You do your own work.
That's very important. So for someone who's listening to this and they're like, okay, I need to set boundaries, but I'm afraid of my spouse's reactions. What should they do as their first step this evening when they get home?
They're going to try a new boundary. First of all, you've got to be sure that you've got like a part B. And if you don't do it, this is what I'm going to do to protect myself. All right. You have to have a part B. You don't need to say the part B until part A doesn't work. And then you contract to have a conversation. Hey, babe, there's something I want to talk about. Is this a good time? Your partner might be, no, I had the worst day at work today, or I'm totally mentally fried. Could we do this tomorrow? So you have to have no attachment to the outcome of that question. Is this a good time? If it's not a good time, you right then and there, you say to your partner, okay, I understand. No problem. When would a good time be? and get a solid answer.
Okay.
And then use the boundary script. You make it about you. I feel sad. I feel angry. I feel disrespected. I feel frustrated. I feel lonely. I feel lonely when you don't tell me what's on your mind. Would you be willing to just spend 10 minutes telling me about your day, maybe share some feelings, ask me about my day, listen with curiosity about my subjective reality? This is what I need.
Yes.
Would you be willing to do this?
Okay. And then wait for them to respond.
Yeah. You asked to set a boundary. Now you've got to see if they're willing to do it.
I like the fact that you are doing the part A, which, yes, you still have your part B if things don't work out, but you are just presenting part A instead of presenting part A with part B hooked to
it. Yeah, because part B can feel more ultimatum-y, right?
Yes.
Right. It's a request.
So just do part.
And you...
Yep.
The thing you have to understand is that it's not who's right and who's wrong. This is what I need. This is what this makes me feel. It may not feel like that for you. It might not feel like that to another partner, but it is how I feel.
Yes.
Because my wounds are getting hit by your wounds.
And I like what you said. It's not about somebody saying it's how I feel.
Yeah. It's subjective.
Because sometimes the conversation can end up being, I'm right, you are wrong, I'm right. And we lose what the conversation was about, which is basically how I feel.
I just need you to be curious. I don't need you to agree with me. I just need you to be curious about my subjective reality. Can you do that? Can you just listen, not to respond, but to be curious about how this feels for me?
Oh, Lisa, I really like how you are able to explain this whole concept of boundaries and doing it with so much grace. And so how can people find you if they want to go deeper and get more information so you can be able to help them with this concept?
So I offer a free discovery call for anybody who's interested in doing work. My website is nancypicardlifecoach.com. Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, Picard, P-I-C-K-A-R-D. And I'm also Nancy Picard Life Coach on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok. I have a million reels that I put out every 3 or 4 reels a week, all discussing this, so you can get so much free information just by scrolling and following me. You'll get it all.
That's really good. And guys, don't forget to follow Nancy, because if you want to go deeper into this concept of boundaries and doing it with so much grace, and actually the way she teaches it really works, go ahead and follow her. Guys, until next time, well, we'll bring another guest at the Live Your Best Marriage podcast. Bye and God bless. Bye. Just.